and read and watch the internet and let it educate you. And the decision will come from that when it's time. It's a beautiful thing. You'll lose money because of that decision, or you'll make money, as it should be. But when you think you're supposed to do something with it and imagine that you're the doer, that's pure delusion. Just follow your passion, do what you love, inquire, and have a happy life while you're doing it.
Sometimes I can't read. I'm losing pieces of memory and losing the ability to track and...
Oh, honey, you've been spared. Have you heard me say that any time I lose someone or something, I've been spared? Well, that's how it really is. Let's look at your next statement.
I don't ever want to panic over money in the stock market again. I'm willing to panic over money in the stock market.
I look forward to. It could happen.
I look forward to panicking over money in the stock market.
Yes, because that will put you back into the work.
That's where I want to be.
That's the purpose of stress. It's a friend. It's an alarm clock built in to let you know that it's time to do the work. You've simply lost the awareness that you're free. So you investigate and you return to what you are. This is what's waiting to be recognized. What is always real. I don't let go of my concepts. I meet them with understanding, then they let go of me. Chapter 10. Doing the work on any thought or situation. There is no thought or situation that you can't put up against inquiry. Every thought, every person, every apparent problem is here for the sake of your freedom. When you experience anything as separate or unacceptable, inquiry can bring you back to the peace you felt before you believed that thought. If you aren't completely comfortable in the world, do the work. That's what every uncomfortable feeling is for. That's what pain is for, what money is for, what everything in the world is for. Your self-realization. It's all a mirror image of your own thinking. Judge it, investigate it, turn it around, and set yourself free if freedom is what you want. It's good that you experience anger, fear, or sadness. Sit down, identify the story, and do the work until you can see everything in the world as a friend. Your work is not done. The turnaround to my thinking. Once you feel competent in doing the work on people, you can inquire into issues like world hunger, fundamentalism, bureaucracy, government, sex, terrorism, or any uncomfortable thought that appears in your mind. As you inquire into issues and turn your judgments around, you come to see that every perceived problem appearing out there is really nothing more than a misperception within your own thinking. When your writing on the worksheet is pointed at an issue, first inquire with the four questions as usual. Then when you get to the turnarounds, substitute the words, "my thinking," for the issue, wherever that seems appropriate. For example, "I don't like war because it frightens me." Turns around to, "I don't like my thinking because it frightens me." Or, "I don't like my thinking, especially about war, because it frightens me." Is that as true or truer for you? Here are a few examples of the turnaround to my thinking. Original statement: I'm angry at bureaucrats for making my life complicated. Turnaround: I'm angry at my thinking for making my life complicated. Original statement: I don't like my handicap because it makes people avoid me. Turnarounds: I don't like my thinking because it makes me avoid people. I don't like my thinking because it makes me avoid myself. Original statement: I want sex to be gentle and loving. Turn around. I want my thinking to be gentle and loving. When the story is hard to find. Sometimes when you feel disturbed, you may find it difficult to identify the thought behind your uncomfortable feeling. If you're having trouble sorting out exactly what thoughts are disturbing you, you might want to try the following exercise. Start with 6 blank sheets of paper and somewhere to spread them out. Number the first page 1. And write across the top, sad, disappointed, ashamed, embarrassed, afraid, irritated, angry. Below that, write, because. About halfway down the page, write, and it means that. Number the next page, 2. And write at the top the word, want. Number the next page, 3. And write at the top the word, should. Number the next page, 4. And write at the top the word, need. Number the next page, 5. And write at the top the word, judge. Number the next page, 6. And write at the top the words, never again. Spread out the 6 pages. Let your mind run wild over the upset. Use your thoughts to fan the flame of your upset. And note which ones do the best job. If no thought works particularly well, try out new or exaggerated thoughts. Write down the thoughts as simply as you can. It helps to be blunt. There's no need to follow a particular sequence. Here is a guide for using the 6 pages. Page 1 is where you describe the situation. Write down what appears as a fact. For example, she didn't show up for our lunch date. Kept me waiting in the restaurant. Never even called. Write facts down in the space after the because. Then circle the relevant emotions. Sad, angry, etc. Then, after, and it means that, write your interpretation of the fact. Try to include your worst-case thoughts. For example, she doesn't love me anymore, or she's seen someone else. If you catch yourself thinking, I want, write it down on page 2. Otherwise, use that page to prompt yourself by focusing on exactly how you would improve the situation or person. What would make it perfect for you? Write in the form, I want. Play God and create your perfection. For example, want her to unfailingly appear on time no matter what. Want to know exactly what she's doing all the time, etc. When you've almost filled this page, ask yourself if you've written what you really want. And if not, write that down at the bottom of the page. Thoughts in the form of so-and-so should or shouldn't go on page 3. If you are unaware of any shoulds, think about what would restore to the situation your sense of justice and order. Write down all the shoulds that would make it right. Page 4 is the I need page, where you can bring the situation back in line with your sense of comfort and security. Write down your requirements for a happy life. Write down the adjustments that would make things be the way they are supposed to be. For example, I need her to love me, or I need to succeed at my job. When you've written a few statements on this page, it can be helpful to ask yourself what you would have then, after all your needs are filled. Write that at the bottom of the page. On page 5, write your merciless evaluation of the person or situation. Make a list of their qualities as they have become apparent to you through this upset. On page 6, write down the aspect of the situation that you vow or hope you will never have to live through again. Now underline all the statements that have the highest emotional charge and do the work on them. one by one. When you have finished, go back and do the work on the rest of your statements. If, after completing the above, you find that you can't look forward to what you wrote on page 6, or that the troublesome story still seems to elude you, another exercise can be very effective. Take several blank sheets of paper and a watch or timer. Focus on the upset and write about it free form for 5 minutes without stopping. When you want to stop, write the last phrase you wrote over and over until you're ready to continue. Afterward, review what you wrote and underline the phrases that are most painful or embarrassing. Transfer the underlined statements to whichever of the 6 pages they best fit on. Walk away from your pages for a while, perhaps overnight, and then reread them, underline all the statements that seem most highly charged. Now you know where to begin doing the work. Nothing outside you can ever give you what you're looking for. Chapter 11. Doing the work on the body and addictions. Bodies don't think, care, or have any problem with themselves. They never beat themselves up or shame themselves. They simply try to keep themselves balanced and to heal themselves. They are entirely efficient, intelligent, kind, and resourceful. Where there's no thought, there's no problem. It's the story we believe prior to investigation that leaves us confused. My pain can't be my body's fault. I tell the story of my body, and because I haven't inquired, I believe that my body is the problem and that if only this or that changed, I would be happy. The body is never our problem. Our problem is always a thought that we innocently believe. The work deals with our thinking, not with the object that we think we're addicted to. There is no such thing as an addiction to an object. There is only an attachment to the uninvestigated concept arising in the moment. For example, I don't care if I smoke or if I don't smoke. It's not about a right or wrong for me. I smoked heavily, even chain-smoked, for many years. Then, in 1986, after the experience of the halfway house, all at once it was over. When I went to Turkey in 1997, I hadn't smoked a cigarette in 11 years. I got into a taxi, and the driver had some wild Turkish music playing on his radio very loud, and he was honking constantly. Honking is what they do there. It's the sound of God, and the 2 lanes are really 6 lanes merging, and everyone drives around honking one another, and it's all happening in a perfect flow. And he turned around and with a big smile offered me a cigarette. I didn't think twice. I took it. And he lit a match for me. The music was going full blast. The horns were going full blast. And I sat in the back seat smoking and loving each moment. It's okay if I do smoke, I noticed. And it's okay if I don't. And I noticed that I haven't smoked since that wonderful taxi ride. But here's addiction. A concept arises that says I should or I shouldn't smoke. I believe it, and I move from the reality of the present moment. Without inquiry, we believe thoughts that aren't true for us, and these thoughts are the reasons that we smoke or drink. Who would you be without your should or shouldn't? If you think that alcohol makes you sick or confused or angry, then when you drink it, it's as if you were drinking your own disease. You're meeting alcohol where it is, and it does exactly what you know it will do. So we investigate the thinking, not in order to stop drinking, but simply to end any confusion about what alcohol will do. And if you believe that you really want to keep drinking, just notice what it does to you. There's no pity in it. There's no victim in it. And eventually, there's no fun in it, only a hangover. If my body gets sick, I go to the doctor. My body is his business. My thinking is my business. And in the peace of that, I'm very clear about what to do and where to go. And then the body becomes a lot of fun, because you're not invested in whether it lives or dies. It's a projected image, a metaphor of your thinking mirrored back to you. On one occasion in 1986, while I was getting a massage, I began to experience a sudden paralysis. It was as if all the ligaments, tendons, and muscles had tightened to an extreme. It was like rigor mortis. I couldn't make even the slightest movement. Throughout the experience, I was perfectly calm and joyful, because I didn't have a story that the body should look a certain way or move fluidly. Thoughts moved through, like, oh my God, I can't move. Something terrible is happening. But the inquiry that was alive within me wouldn't allow any attachment to these thoughts. If that process were slowed down and given words, it would sound like this. You're never going to be able to walk again, sweetheart. Can you really know that that's true? They're so fast, these four questions. Eventually, they meet a thought at the instant of its arising. At some point, after about an hour, my body began to relax and go back to what people would call its normal state. My body can never be a problem if my thinking is healthy. An unhealthy heart? How do you live when you believe the thought that your body should be different? How does that feel? I'll be happy later when my body is healed. I should be thinner, healthier, prettier, younger. This is a very old religion. If I think my body should be different from what it is now, I'm out of my business. I'm out of my mind. I'm not asking you to let go of your body, as if such a thing were possible. I'm asking you to own your body, to care for it, to take a look at your beliefs about it, to put them on paper, inquire, and turn them around.
I'm angry at my heart because it is diseased and weak. It restricts all my physical activities, and I could easily die at any time.
Is it true that your heart is diseased and weak?
Well, yes, it's hereditary. Both my parents and three grandparents died of heart disease.
Your parents had heart disease, and it sounds as though you've inherited a belief system that terrifies you. The doctors have told you that you have heart disease, and I'm inviting you to ask yourself today, can you really know that it's true?
Well, no, I can't really know that. It could have changed in the last 4 minutes.
That's right. We can't ever really know anything. How do I know that my heart should be like this? That's the way it is. Reality always shows me. How do you react when you believe the thought that your heart is diseased and weak?
I get frightened. I limit my activities. I stay inside and become very inactive. I get depressed that I can't do what I want to do. I imagine the pain and terror of a heart attack. I feel hopeless.
The result is that you stay focused on the hopelessness and don't look at your thinking. That's where the fear comes from your uninvestigated thoughts. As long as you see your heart as the problem and look outside your own mind for solutions, you can't know anything but fear. Who or what would you be if you never had the thought that your heart is diseased and weak?
I think I'd be more peaceful and also freer to do what I want to do.
Let's turn what you wrote around, replacing the word heart with thinking.
I'm angry at my thinking because it is diseased and weak.
Your mind is diseased and weak when it names your heart as the problem. You're quite insane at that moment. Your mind is diseased when you believe that your heart isn't exactly as it should be now. How do you know that? If you have one belief that opposes what is, you feel out of harmony and your heart begins to race. Your body is the loving reflection of your mind. Until you understand that, your heart will continue to be your teacher, always showing you the kinder way. Read your next statement.
I want my heart to be healed completely.
Is that true? Is that really true?
What a question.
Interesting, isn't it? Can you absolutely know that your heart needs to heal completely?
It sure seems that way. No, I can't absolutely know that.
How do you react when you believe the thought that your heart isn't normal for you and needs to be healed?
I think about it all the time. I think about dying and I scare myself. I try to consider all the medical options and natural healing options and I get really confused. I'm desperate to figure it out and I can't.
Who or what would you be without the story? I want my heart to be healed completely.
I would be just living my life. I wouldn't be so afraid. I'd be more present when my doctor is talking to me. I see myself just enjoying what I'm doing, whether I'm active or not. And I wouldn't be so focused on the future, on dying.
That makes sense to me. Let's turn it around.
I want my thinking to be healed completely.
Isn't that as true or truer? We've been attempting to heal bodies for thousands of years, and they still get sick and old and they die. Bodies come to pass, not to stay. No body has ever been healed ultimately. There is only the mind to heal if it's peace that you want, whether you're sick or well. Read the next statement.
My heart is weak, diseased, not dependable, restrictive, confining, and prone to pain.
Is that true?
No, not really. It's just as true to say my mind is weak, diseased, not dependable, restrictive, confining, and prone to pain when it sees my heart as that.
How does it feel when you think that your heart is insufficient? Everyone's heart is perfect, as it is right now. Everyone's heart should be exactly as healthy as it is now, even someone whose heart is stopping.
If I think my heart is perfect and I have pain, will I still take action?
Absolutely. I call it doing the dishes and loving it. When you have some understanding of your thoughts through inquiry, then you can call 911 consciously without fear or panic. You're more able to describe your situation and answer questions clearly. You've always known what to do. That doesn't change. Let's look at the next statement.
I am not willing to give up on my heart or let it cease to function or preclude my living a normal, active life.
Yes, you are, sweetheart. If your heart stops, you die. Dying, like everything else, isn't a choice, even though it can appear that way. Can you see a way to turn that last one around?
I am willing to give up on my heart.
Good for you. Give up on your heart. Turn that over to your doctor. Work with your thinking. That's where it will count. Your heart will love you for it. Continue with the turnaround.
I am willing to let it cease to function. I am willing to let my heart preclude my living a normal life.
Now read these statements again. Read each one as I look forward to.
I look forward to giving up on my heart. I look forward to letting my heart cease to function. I look forward to letting it preclude me from living a normal life.
Sounds like freedom to me. Follow your doctor's advice and watch what happens from a sane and loving position. Eventually, you may come to know that your body is not your business. It's your doctor's business. The only thing for you to heal is an erroneous belief appearing now. Thank you, sweetheart. My daughter's addiction. I have worked with hundreds of alcoholics, and I've always found that they were drunk with their thinking before they were drunk with their drinking. Many of them have told me that the work includes all 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. For example, it gives a clear form to the fourth and fifth steps, taking a fearless inventory of ourselves and admitting the exact nature of our wrongs that thousands have wanted to do and haven't known how to. Don't necessarily do the work on drinking, I tell them. Go back to the thought just prior to the thought that you need a drink, and do the work on that. on that man or woman, on that situation. The prior thought is what you're trying to shut down with alcohol. Your uninvestigated thinking is the problem, not alcohol. Alcohol is honest and true. It promises to get you drunk, and it does. It promises to make things worse, and it does. It's always true to its word. It's a great teacher of integrity. It doesn't say, drink me. It just sits there, true to itself, waiting to do its job. Do the work on your uninvestigated thoughts, and also go to 12-step meetings. Share your experience and strength at meetings so that you can hear it yourself. You are always the one you're working with. It's your truth, not ours, that will set you free. When my daughter Roxanne was 16, she drank very heavily and also did drugs. This had begun to happen before I woke up with the questions in 1986. But I was so depressed then that I was totally unaware of it. After inquiry was alive in me, though, I began to notice her actions as well as my thoughts about them. She used to drive off every night in her new red Camaro. If I asked where she was going, she would give me a furious look and slam the door on her way out. It was a look I understood well. I taught her to see me that way. I myself had worn that look on my face for many years. Through inquiry, I learned to become very quiet around her, around everyone. I learned how to be a listener. I would often sit and wait up for her far past midnight for the pure privilege of seeing her, just for that privilege. I knew she was drinking, and I knew I couldn't do a thing about it. The thoughts that would appear in my mind were thoughts like these. She's probably drunk and driving, and she'll be killed in a crash, and I'll never see her again. I'm her mother. I bought her the car. I'm responsible. I should take her car from her. But it wasn't mine to take. I had given it to her. It was hers. She'll drive while she's drunk, and she'll kill someone. She'll crash into another car or drive into a lamppost and kill herself and her passengers. As the thoughts appeared, each one would be met with wordless, thoughtless inquiry. And inquiry instantly brought me back to reality. Here's what was true. Woman sitting in chair, waiting for her beloved daughter. One evening, after being gone for a 3-day weekend, Roxanne came through the door with a look of great misery on her face, and it seemed to me, without any defenses. She saw me sitting there, and she just fell into my arms and said, "Mom, I can't do this anymore. Please help me. Whatever this thing is that you're giving to all these people who come to our house, I want it." So we did the work, and she joined Alcoholics Anonymous. That was the last time she did alcohol or drugs. Whenever she had a problem after that, she didn't need a drink or drug, and she didn't need me. She just wrote the problem down, asked for questions, and turned it around. When there's peace here, there's peace there. To have a way to see beyond the illusion of suffering is the greatest gift. I love that all my children have taken advantage of it. In the next dialogue, you'll meet Charlotte, a woman consumed by her thoughts about her daughter's drug addiction. As you listen, consider what you might be addicted to. Maybe it's not drugs or cigarettes. Maybe you're addicted to being appreciated, to getting attention, or to being right. Ultimately, you may discover that going outside yourself in order to gain anything is painful.
I'm afraid of my daughter's drug addiction because it's killing her.
Can you absolutely know that that's true? And I'm not saying that it's not. This is just a question. Her drug addiction is killing her. Can you absolutely know that that's true?
No.
How do you react when you think the thought, her drug addiction is killing her?
I get very angry.
And what do you say to her? And what do you do?
I judge her. I push her away. I'm afraid of her. I don't want her around.
Who would you be in the presence of your daughter without the thought her drug addiction is killing her?
I'd be more relaxed. I'd be more myself and less mean to her, less reactive.
When this work found me, my daughter was, in her words, an alcoholic and doing drugs. And the questions were alive in me. Her addiction is killing her. Can I absolutely know that that's true? No. And who would I be without this story? I would be totally there for her, loving her with all my heart, as long as she lasts. Maybe she'll die tomorrow of an overdose. But she's in my arms now. How do you treat her when you think the thought her drug addiction is killing her?
I don't want to see her. I don't want her around.
That's fear. And fear is what we experience when we're attached to the nightmare. Drug addiction is killing her. Turn it around. When you're turning around an issue like drugs, put the words "my thinking" in place of the issue. My thinking?
My thinking is killing her.
There's another turnaround. My thinking is?
Killing me.
Yes.
It's killing our relationship.
She's dying of a drug overdose, and you're dying of a thinking overdose. She could last a lot longer than you.
Yes, that's true. The stress is really wearing me down.
She's stoned, you're stoned. I've been through this one.
Yeah, I get really toxic when it comes up in my face again that she's using drugs.
She's using, turn it around.
I'm using?
Yes, you're using her to stay toxic. She uses drugs, you use her. What's the difference? Let's look at the next statement.
I'm angry and saddened by Linda's drug addiction because I feel it's endangering my granddaughter Debbie's life.
So you think that something will happen and your granddaughter will die?
Or be molested, or...
So because of your daughter's drug addiction, something terrible can happen to your granddaughter.
Yeah.
Is that true? And I'm not saying it's not true. These are just questions. There's no motive here. This is about the end of suffering. Can you absolutely know that that's true?
No, I can't know that.
How do you react when you think that thought?
Well, I've been crying for most of the last 2 days. I haven't slept in 48 hours. I've been feeling terror.
Give me a stress-free reason to believe this.
There is none.
My daughter's drug addiction is endangering my granddaughter's life? Turn it around. My thinking addiction?
My thinking addiction is endangering my life. Yeah, I can see that. That's true.
Now read it saying, my drug addiction?
My drug addiction is endangering my life?
Yes. And your drug addiction is her.
Oh. Well, I can see that. My drug addiction is her. I'm so much in her business.
That's it. She's addicted to drugs, and you're addicted to mentally running her life. She's your drug.
Okay.
It's insane to mentally be in my children's business.
Even with the baby?
She should take care of the baby. Turn it around.
I should take care of the baby?
Yes, you do it.
Oh, God, I should do that?
What do you think? According to you, she's not available.
Well, I'm already raising 3 of my other daughter's babies from birth, so...
We'll raise 4, raise 5, raise 1,000. There are children hungry all over the world. What are you doing sitting here?
I guess my question about that is if I raise the child for her, then I'm enabling her to use drugs. I could be the one to kill her.
So taking care of the baby is a problem for you. It's the same way for her. This just puts us in a place of humility. Are you doing the best you can?
Yes.
I believe you. When you think, my daughter should do something about it, turn it around, I should do something about it. And if you can't, you're just like your daughter. When she says, I can't, you can understand. But when you get furious at her because you haven't investigated your own thinking, you're both stoned and you teach your daughter craziness.
Ugh.
Drug addiction is endangering Debbie's life. Turn it around.
My thinking about Linda's drug addiction is endangering my life.
Yes.
That's absolutely true.
Whose business is her drug addiction?
Hers.
Whose business is your drug addiction?
Mine.
Take care of that. Let's look at the next one.
My daughter's drug addiction is ruining her life.
Can you absolutely know that it's true that your daughter's drug addiction is ruining her life in the long run?
No.
It all begins to make sense. I love that you answered that question. What I found when I did the work on my daughter in 1986 was that I had to go deep to find the same thing. And it turned out that because of that addiction, her life today is very rich. The bottom line is that I just can't know anything. I watch the way things are in reality. This leaves me in a position to act sanely and lovingly, and life is always perfectly beautiful. And if she died, I'd still be able to see that. But I can't fool myself. I really have to know the truth. If this path were your only way to God, would you choose it?
Yes.
Well, that seems to be the case. No mistake. We've been daughter-realized forever. Now let's be self-realized. Read the statement again.
My daughter's drug addiction is ruining her life.
How do you react when you think that thought?
I feel hopeless.
And how do you live when you feel hopeless?
I don't live at all.
Can you see a reason to drop this thought?
Yes.
Who would you be living your life without this thought?
Well, I'd certainly be a better mother.
Good. You're the expert. And here's what I'm learning from you. With the thought, suffering. Without the thought, no suffering. And you'd be a better mother. So what does your daughter have to do with your problem? Zero. If you think that your daughter is your problem, welcome to the work. Your daughter is the perfect daughter for you because she's going to bring up every uninvestigated concept you have until you get a clue about reality. That's her job. Everything has its job. This candle's job is to burn. This rose's job is to blossom. Your daughter's job is to use drugs. My job is to drink my tea now. And when you understand, she'll follow you. She'll understand. It's a law, because she's your projection. When you move into the polarity of truth, so will she. Hell here, hell there. Peace here, peace there. Let's look at the next one.
It almost seems silly now. Should I read what I wrote anyway?
You may as well. Thought happens.
I am angry, confused, saddened, and afraid. All of it. At my daughter Linda's drug addiction, because it brings me excruciating pain.
Turn it around.
Obviously, my thinking about her is what brings me excruciating pain. Yeah.
Yes, your daughter has nothing to do with your pain.
That's absolutely true. I can see that. I can feel it.
I love it when people realize this, because when they see the innocence of their children and their parents and their partners, they come to see their own innocence. This work is about 100% forgiveness, because that's what you want. That's what you are. Let's look at the next one.
I'm afraid of Linda's drug addiction because it changes her personality.
Turn it around. I'm afraid of my thinking.
I'm afraid of my thinking because it changes Linda's personality?
Interesting. Now try it changes my.
It changes my personality. Yeah, okay.
And therefore Linda's.
And therefore Linda's.
Isn't it funny how we're the last place we look? Always trying to change the projected rather than clear the projector? We haven't known a way to do this until now.
Yeah.
So read it just like that.
I'm afraid of my thinking because it changes my personality.
Feel it?
Wow. And I can't see her then. That's it. I'm afraid of my thinking because it changes my personality, and then I can't see myself or her. Yeah.
Have you ever been angry at her and thought, how can I say that to her? Why am I hurting her? She's my whole life. I love her. And I just treat her like...
like shit. It's like I become someone else. I'm so mean to her when she's using.
Because you're a drug user. And she is your drug. How else can you be a champion of suffering? Parents call me and say, my child's a drug addict. She's in trouble. And they don't see that they're the ones in trouble. Their child is often doing fine, or at least as well as the parent. And when you get clear, your daughter will follow. You are the way. Let's look at the next one.
I'm angry at Linda's drug addiction because when she uses, I'm afraid of her.
Turn it around.
I'm angry at my drug addiction because then I'm afraid of myself. That's exactly what happens when she shows up and she's using. I'm afraid of my own behavior around her.
You're afraid of her. Is it true?
No.
How do you react? How do you treat her when you think that thought?
I get angry, volatile, aggressive, and especially I shut her out.
Like some kind of poison walked into the house.
Yeah, that's exactly what I do.
And she's your baby.
Yeah.
And you treat her like some bug that just crawled in.
Right. That's exactly right.
She's your dearest child and you treat her like an enemy. That's the power of uninvestigated thinking. That's the power of the nightmare. It has to live itself out. You think, I'm afraid of her, and you have to live that out. But if you investigate that thought, I'm afraid of her, is it true? The nightmare disappears. When she walks into the house and you have the thought, I'm afraid of her, laughter replaces fear. You just put your arms around her and you can hear how she's afraid of herself. She'll sit there and tell you. There's no listener in your home now. There's just a teacher of fear. That's understandable because until now, you haven't asked yourself if your thoughts are true. Let's look at the next statement.
I need Linda to stay away from me when she's on drugs.
Is that true? And I'm not saying it's not.
I feel like it is.
And does she come to you when she's on drugs?
No, not anymore.
So that's what you need, because that's what you have. No mistake. If my daughter doesn't come see me, that's how I know I don't need her. If she comes, that's how I know I need her.
And when she does come, I treat her in this horrible way.
So turn the statement around.
I need myself to stay away from me when I'm on drugs. That's really true.
One way you can stay away from yourself when you're on drugs, the drug of Linda, is to judge your daughter, write it down, ask four questions, and turn it around. And stay away from who you think you are, this fearful, angry woman, and come back to your beautiful self. It's what you wanted her to do. So I know that you can. This is a life's work. You have much more energy when you're just working on yourself.
Yeah, then I would want her around whether she was using or not.
I don't know.
At least I would be available to her when she's using instead of shutting off.
That could be a lot less painful for both of you.
Yeah.
It's wonderful to realize that. Nice work, sweetheart. Everything happens for me, not to me. Chapter 12. Making friends with the worst that can happen. I have helped people do the work on rape, war in Vietnam and Bosnia, torture, internment in Nazi concentration camps, the death of a child, and the prolonged pain of illnesses like cancer. Many of us think that it's not humanly possible to accept extreme experiences like these, much less meet them with unconditional love. But not only is that possible, It's our true nature. Nothing terrible has ever happened except in our thinking. Reality is always good, even in situations that seem like nightmares. The story we tell is the only nightmare that we have lived. When I say that the worst that can happen is a belief, I am being literal. The worst that can happen to you is your uninvestigated belief system. Afraid of death. In the school for the work, I love to use inquiry to walk people through the thing they most fear, the worst that could possibly happen. For many of them, the worst thing is death. They often believe that they'll suffer terribly not only during the process of dying, but also after they die. I take them deep enough into these waking nightmares to dispel the illusion of fear, pain, and suffering. I have sat with many people on their deathbeds, and after we do the work, they always tell me that they're fine. I remember one very frightened woman who was dying of cancer. She had requested that I sit with her, so I came. I sat down beside her and said, "I don't see a problem." She said, "No? Well, I'll show you a problem." And she pulled off the sheet. One of her legs was so swollen that it was at least twice the size of the normal leg. I looked and I looked, and I still couldn't find a problem. She said, "You must be blind. Look at this leg. Now look at the other one." And I said, "Oh, now I see the problem. You're suffering from the belief that that leg should look like this one. Who would you be without that thought?" And she got it. She began to laugh, and the fear just poured out through her laughter. She said that this was the happiest she had ever been in her entire life. I once went to visit a woman who was dying in a hospice. When I walked in, she was napping. So I just sat by her bed until she opened her eyes. I took her hand and we talked for a few minutes. And she said, "I'm so frightened. I don't know how to die." And I said, "Sweetheart, is that true?" She said, "Yes. I just don't know what to do." I said, "When I walked in, you were taking a nap. Do you know how to take a nap?" She said, "Of course." And I said, "You close your eyes every night and you go to sleep. People look forward to sleeping. That's all death is. That's as bad as it gets, except for your belief system that says there's something else." She told me she believed in the after-death thing and said, "I won't know what to do when I get there." I said, "Can you really know that there's something to do?" She said, "I guess not." I said, "There's nothing you have to know. And it's always all right. Everything you need is already there for you. You don't have to give it a thought. All you have to do is take a nap when you need to. And when you wake up, you'll know what to do." I was describing life to her, of course, not death. Then we went into the second question. "Can you absolutely know that it's true that you don't know how to die?" She began to laugh and said that she preferred being with me to being with her story. What fun having nowhere to go but where we really are now. When the mind thinks of death, it looks at nothing and calls it something to keep from experiencing what it, the mind, really is. Until you know that death is equal to life, you'll always try to control what happens, and it's always going to hurt. There's no sadness without a story that opposes reality. The fear of death is the last smokescreen for the fear of love. We think that we're afraid of the death of our body, though what we're really afraid of is the death of our identity. But through inquiry, as we understand that death is just a concept and that our identity is a concept too, we come to realize who we are. This is the end of fear. Loss is another concept. I was in the delivery room when my grandson Race was born. I loved him at first sight. Then I realized that he wasn't breathing. The doctor had a troubled look on his face and immediately started to do something with the baby. The nurses realized that the procedures weren't working, and you could see the panic began to take over the room. Nothing they did was working. The baby wouldn't breathe. At a certain moment, Roxanne looked into my eyes, and I smiled. She later told me, "You know that smile you often have on your face, Mom? When I saw you look at me like that, a wave of peace came over me. And even though the baby wasn't breathing, it was okay with me." Soon afterward, breath entered my grandson, and I heard him cry. I love that my grandson didn't have to breathe for me to love him. Whose business was his breathing? Not mine. I wasn't going to miss one moment of him, whether he was breathing or not. I knew that even without a single breath, he had lived a full life. I love reality, not the way a fantasy would dictate, but just the way it is right now.
I'm angry at death because it destroys me. I'm afraid of dying. I can't accept death. Death should let me be reincarnated. Death is painful. Death is the end. I never want to experience the fear of death again.
Let's start at the top. Read your first statement again.
I'm angry at death because it destroys me.
If you want to live in terror, get a future. That's quite a future you've planned, sweetheart. Let's hear the next statement.
I'm afraid of dying.
What's the worst that could happen when you die? Let's play with that.
The death of my body.
And then what would happen?
I don't know.
Well, what do you think is the worst that could happen? You think that something terrible could happen? What is it?
That death is the end, and I'm not born again, and that there is no soul.
And then you're not born again. There is no soul. So far, there's nothing. So far, the worst that can happen to you is nothing. And then?
Yes, but it's painful.
So the nothing is painful?
Yes.
Can you really know that that's true? How can nothing be painful? How can it be anything? Nothing is nothing.
I imagine this nothing as a black hole that is very uncomfortable.
So nothing is a black hole. Can you really know that that's true? I'm not saying that it's not. I know how you love your stories. It's the old black hole story.
I think that's the worst thing that could happen.
Okay, so when you die, you would go into a big black hole forever.
Or to hell. I call this black hole hell.
A big black hell hole forever.
And it is a hellfire.
A big black hell hole fire forever.
Yes, and it's turned away from God.
Totally away from God. Fire and darkness in this big black hell hole forever. I want to ask you, can you absolutely know that that's true?
No, I can't.
How does it feel when you believe that thought?
It's painful. It's horrible.
Sweetheart, look at me. Are you in touch with what you're feeling right now? Look at yourself. This is the dark hole of hell. You're in it. It doesn't come later. You're living your story of your future death right now. This terror is as bad as it gets. Can you see a reason to drop this story? And I'm not asking you to drop it.
Yes.
Give me a reason to keep the story that doesn't feel like being in a dark fire from hell.
I can't.
Who or what would you be without this story? You've already been living the worst that could happen. Imagination without investigation. Lost in hell. No way out.
Pushed away from God.
Yes, angel, pushed away from the awareness of God in your life. You can't push yourself away from God. That's not a possibility. You can only push yourself away from the awareness of God within you for a while. As long as you worship this old idol, this old black hole story of yours, there's no room for any awareness of God in you. This story is what you've been worshiping like a child in pure innocence. Let's look at the next statement.
I'm afraid of dying.
I understand that, but no one is afraid of dying. They're just afraid of their story about dying. Look at what you think death is. You've been describing your life, not death. This is the story of your life.
Yes.
Let's look at the next statement.
I can't accept death.
Is that true?
Well, yes. I have a lot of trouble accepting it.
Can you absolutely know that it's true that you can't accept death?
It's hard to believe that that's possible.
When you're not thinking about death, you fully accept it. You're not worrying about it at all. Think of your foot.
Okay.
Did you have a foot before you thought of it? Where was it? When there's no thought, there's no foot. When there's no thought of death, there's no death.
Really? I can't believe it's that simple.
How do you react? How do you feel when you believe the thought, I can't accept death?
Helpless. Frightened.
What would you be in your life without this story, I can't accept death?
What would my life be without that thought? It would be beautiful.
I can't accept death. Turn it around.
I can accept death.
Everyone can. Everyone does. There's no decision in death. People who know that there's no hope are free. The decision's out of their hands. It has always been that way, but some people have to die bodily to find out. No wonder they smile on their deathbeds. Dying is everything they were looking for in life. Their delusion of being in charge is over. When there's no choice, there's no fear, and in that, there's peace. They realize that they're home and that they've never left.
This fear of losing control is very strong. And also this fear of love. It's all connected.
It's terrifying to think you could lose control, even though the truth is that you never had it in the first place. That's the death of fantasy and the birth of reality. Let's look at the next statement.
Death should let me be reincarnated.
You should be reincarnated. Can you really know that that's true? Welcome to the story of a future.
No, I can't know if that's true.
You don't even like it this time around. Why do you want to do it again? Boy, what a dark hole this is. I think I'll come back again. You want to come back again. Is that true?
No, it's not. I don't want to be reincarnated. It was a mistake.
We reincarnate. Can you absolutely know that that's true?
No, I've just heard and read that we do.
How do you react when you think that thought?
I feel anxious about what I'm doing now, because I think I may have to make up for it later, and I may even be punished for it, or at least have to suffer for many lifetimes because I've hurt so many people in my life. I'm afraid that I've piled up a lot of bad karma, and maybe I've blown it this lifetime, and I'll have to start over again and again in lower forms of life.
Who would you be without the thought that we reincarnate?
Less fearful. Freer.
Reincarnation may be a useful concept for some people, but in my experience, nothing reincarnates but a thought. I am. I am a woman. I am a woman with children, and so on, ad infinitum. Do you want to end karma? It's simple. I am. Is it true? Who would I be without this story? No karma whatsoever. And I look forward to the next life, and here it comes. It's called now. Let's look at the next statement.
Death is painful.
Can you really know that that's true?
I can't.
How does it feel when you believe the thought that death is painful?
It feels stupid now.
Death is painful. Turn it around. My thinking?
My thinking is painful.
Isn't that truer?
Yes. Yes.
Death was never that unkind. Death is simply the end of thought. Fantasy without investigation is painful sometimes. Let's look at the next.
Death is the end.
That's a good one. Can you really know that that's true?
I can't.